Mm-hmm. Were we down there watching them cut up the last of the Carissa or something?
Good morning and welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Natural Resources Subcommittee for Monday, June 7th. We are having public hearings and possible work session on House Bill 5047. That's the Department of Land Conservation and Development budget. When last we met, Thursday last week, we were in the middle of a budget summary and presentation of budget details and recommendations from our legislative fiscal analyst, Ken Rocco. And we had gone through all the option packages in session one of the budget note that has been prepared, the memorandum that's been prepared by Mr. Rocco. We're on the grants portion on page three. And we'll begin with Mr. Rocco.
Thank you, Chair. Dan has out a revised memo to the members of the committee to correct the error I had made in section 1I. So starting on page 3, under grant item number 2, legislative fiscal recommendation is to eliminate package 302, which is local planning for salmon recovery and healthy streams. This is the package that was discussed that is a continuation of a local planning grant program that was approved as part of the Oregon plan. It was proposed to be included in the agency's budget as using Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board grants under the Oregon plan. However, that program has now been modified to use Measure 66 lottery funds. And the suggestion is to just delete this from the agency's budget at this point and include it with discussions on House Bill 3225, which is the bill that's going to allocate the Measure 66 lottery funds. Package 306 is recommended for approval. This is the Coastal Zone Management Grant Program and reflects additional federal funds limitations for higher federal grant revenues anticipated in the biennium. The agency came into the emergency board in June of 98 and got an increase of about $99,000 for federal funds limitation. This basically just continues that level of limitation that wasn't included in the base. Those are the only two packages. However, there are some other recommended changes that the fiscal office is making. It's been the pattern in the past several biennia to include direction to the department to allocate grant monies to the counties in the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area. And in the past, those have been various amounts. It's usually about $60,000 total in this budget. Last biennium, it was in addition to the $60,000, there was $100,000 provided in the Columbia River Gorge Commission budget. This time, the proposed direction is to allocate a total of $240,000 to the three counties in the Columbia River Gorge. And the budget note indicates they would be in differing amounts to differing counties based on some material we received from the counties estimating their costs associated with the National Scenic Area Act implementation. And I don't think the amounts provided are will fully cover those costs. However, it's a move towards a greater portion of the costs that the counties incur from previous biennium. And this was discussed when the committee approved the Columbia River Gorge Commission budget a couple of weeks ago. And item D, there's language to appropriate $250,000 of the base budget general fund for technical assistance and periodic review grants to the emergency board and direct the department to request these funds after reporting on a plan to help distressed communities with grants. And this budget note comes out of the discussion that the chair had concerning helping small cities and distressed communities comply with goals 9 and 10. There's no time frame on this for the report to the emergency board, but the department basically should come to the emergency board at any time with such a discussion and request those funds be released. Item E concerns the regional problem solving program. Currently, the statutes that initiated that program sunset on June 30th, 1999. There's $525,000 of grant funds in the agency's base budget anticipating continuation of this program. And currently there's two pieces of legislation pending that either repeal or extend the sunset. Senate Bill 543, which modifies the process of periodic review for small cities and counties, repeals the sunset, and House Bill 2406, which requires the department to conduct an inventory of rural lands, extends the sunset until 2003. Due to the uncertainty of this program's continuation, we, Legislative Fiscal, has identified three options that the committee has in this area. Basically, the program can be assumed to continue and the positions and grant funds associated with it can be left in the base budget, and the committee could give some direction to the agency to use those funds for grants to cities and counties if for some reason the program is not continued. That's one option. The second option is to appropriate a portion of the funds to the emergency board that could be released when after it's known whether or not the program is going to continue, and then the agency could come forward with a proposal for the next round of projects using those funds. If the program is not continued, then the amount of funds remaining in the agency's base budget could be used to finish off the current projects that the regional problem-solving program has underway, and most of those are near completion and would just need a small amount of continued funds to finish them off. And finally, the third option would be to include the grant amount and the remaining positions in the agency's base budget in one of the pieces of legislation or both of the pieces of legislation so that those resources would only be made available to the agency if the bill itself passed, which would either remove the sunset or extend the sunset.
Good question.
That's my
question.
And the status of 543 and 2406.
Mr. Chair, I believe Representative King, I'm not certain. I think both of those are in Ways and Means at this point. Waiting for hearing. Mr. Chair.
Right.
Further questions from the question?
Well, I think the more important point is that they're both probably going to be detailed, which is the dangerous thing. They have elements in it that are unacceptable, like time and secondary lands mapping, which is unfortunate, but that's the decision of the leadership.
Is the, I think there's no other vehicle that we're aware of that extends the date or eliminates the sunset. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and for the department.
Thank you, Senator. Is there another piece of legislation besides the two that were cited that extend the deadline or repeal the deadline?
Not to my knowledge. In my understanding of the status of 543 is that legislative council found some erroneous referral language in it, references to other provisions of the statute, and that it is likely to be called back to some committee. I think, it could come back to the House Water Committee because that committee is still open. I don't believe it's yet gone to Ways and Means.
We have also recommended a budget note to be included in this budget, but we'll get to that in section 3. No, I guess it's in
Mr. Ashley, question.
Richard King.
543 and 2406 are, I don't know, is it possible that this committee could deal with them?
That is. So to answer your observation, this committee could be a committee called upon to modify it. Accurate.
This is Chair. Finally, section in page 5 of the memo, item number 3, landowner notification. Legislative fiscal is recommending adding a new subsection to the appropriation bill, House Bill 5047, in section 1 for landowner notification expenses related to the passage of ballot measure 56. What has happened here is the emergency board in January of 99 provided $511,500 out of the emergency fund for the first phase of the landowner notification cost. Of that amount, $500,000 was for reimbursement of notification costs, and $11,500 was to establish a clerical position and to spend some dollars on attorney general advice on questions regarding implementation of Measure 56. To date, as the department has indicated, they've paid out about a little over $3,000 in notification claims, but anticipate many more claims coming in for these costs. We're still not certain the exact effect of the total cost of this program, so the recommendation is to disappropriate the remaining funds from the agency that would otherwise revert to the general fund ending balance, and we're estimating about $495,000 of general fund, and then reappropriating that back to the department, or reappropriating $500,000 back to the department to cover notification costs that may occur before the first emergency board meeting. In the governor's recommended budget, there is simply an indication that the agency should go back to the emergency board when they know more about the cost. We feel it's more prudent to give them some money to get started in case local jurisdictions need reimbursement before the emergency board gets started. Probably in September will be the first meeting. Included in this recommendation is the authorization for a limited duration administrative specialist 2 position that would be used to get the program, or continue the program that's currently started by the agency. And then we would direct the agency to report to the emergency board for additional allocations from the emergency fund when they had a better feel for the level of reimbursement costs that they were receiving from local jurisdictions. And finally, on the page 6, there's just a summary of the total recommendation. This does not include the action the committee may take on the regional problem-solving program, which we did not make an official recommendation on, but just gave 3 options to the committee. And just to point out, on the final page is a budget note that was recommended for inclusion along with package 101, which is on page, the budget note is following page 6, but it's attached to item B on page 1, which discusses the recommended approval of package 101, which is the community solutions team effort. There's been a suggestion by the co-chairs that this budget note be included in all agencies that receive community solution team packages.
Questions for Mr. Rocco?
Sure. Is there any consideration in the staff's recommendations to the coastal planners being located in coastal communities as opposed to being out of Salem? Such as Peace Bay Settlement, maybe, is to be centrally for the North and South planners, and also as to the federal funds, the amount of the grants going to local communities.
Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, in response to your inquiry, I believe we have drafted some language that were budget notes that were brought forward regarding those items, and we've drafted some alternative language that I was going to take to the co-chair for approval and then bring back to the committee when the final work session is done on this session.
So we'll just note that as an item that we'll be bringing forward to the final work session. Shall be an indicator to our committee that we're probably not going to be in our session today. The chair's preference on the issue on page 4, which is regional problem solving. We've been discussing regional problem solving in a number of places, and it appears to me to have a real merit as something that we want to put forward as a tool to resolve issues. It seems to really bring to bear the kind of cross-jurisdictional expertise that's needed to get the job done for local jurisdictions. It can have the effect of reducing conflict and potential litigation. The connection between the sunset of the program or the extension of the legal deadline is something that we have to deal with. And since that is a substandard issue, and there are two bills in play, it seems to make sense that we pick one of these three different options, because the first two are connected with, at least the first has to assume that a continuation of the program occurs, and the second option, again, also is conditional in the program approval. The third option at least talks about choosing one of the pieces of legislation for amendment, and at least at this point, I conclude that Measure 543 has the modification of a periodic review, and that may be more difficult and complicated than the House Bill 2406, which is an inventory map, which is something that many of the members have expressed, at least from rural areas, many of the members have expressed interest in doing. We've heard in this committee voluminous testimony from county residents and elected public officials that when they did their zoning overlays, they defaulted to a farm use zone after they'd already identified their inventory of lands in the urban growth boundary, their industrializable lands, their residential lands, their reserve areas within the UGBs, and then they went ahead and designated high-value farmland, and at the other end of the list, they ran out of designations. There was no classification for secondary lands, so they defaulted into exclusive farm zones and forestry zones, and those designations have made the modifications rather process-heavy and it sort of became a focal point for discussions on the broader issue of protection for high-value resource lands when arguably they don't really fit into that category. So I would urge the committee to consider, even though there may be some differences of opinion between the executive and the legislative, that we really do need to get a better inventory of the resource. The only way that's going to be accomplished is to map the soils and look at the land base.
Well, I have to point out, I believe that the objection is not so much the mapping as it is the definition. I think you're aware of that.
Yes, and I agree. If you've spoken to some of the folks that do dry land grazing on the east side of the state of Oregon, there's some mighty poor soil types and producing some mighty good cattle crops. So, it is a matter of the beholder. And on western Oregon soils, the high clay, chalky soils that really are not suitable for row crops or irrigated agriculture tend to grow pretty good wine grapes. So there are some differences of opinion about what resource lands are. Senator Farron.
Mr. Chair, it's amazing that marginal land seems to have somewhat of a positive connotation as opposed to secondary land, which is for some reason viewed as negative. And I think to a large degree, we're trying to get the same problem, to solve the same problem. And marginal lands, and Dick, maybe you can help us out a little bit, too. The difference between the two. You know, we've had the marginal land system in I think, Washington and Lane County for a while, and while it's had some difficulties, it seems to be moving, albeit a little slow. We're ready to deal with the marginal land concept, but we're not willing to put secondary lands in.
That's sure, maybe Rick will want to address it. I don't know.
That's been a frustration that I've had.
Senator Turner, we have a way of treating our words. If a word takes on a bad connotation, then we'd like to get the word out of the language. And the marginal lands term was added in 83, and it was initially a popular term. And then those who were implementing it decided they were unhappy with the results. So nobody wanted to talk about marginal lands anymore. And secondary lands came to substitute for it. And then there were, from 1985 to 1992, secondary lands was the word, and that became unpopular, and small-scale resource land then replaced it. And that became unpopular in the shortest time span. I think it's just a question of coming up with a new word. Whatever it is.
Developer land, how's that?
Well, in one moment, Senator, you're next. I agree. I mean, there's some other issues here. There's some philosophical issues that we seem to be skirting, and we're trying to use words in order not to discuss the issues, which are, in fact, whether or not open space is an appropriate public use of lands in rural areas, and whether or not livability is another euphemism for population control, and whether the transportation growth management issue isn't just social planning, centralized social planning. And those are all different concepts that sort of come into play here. Notwithstanding all of them, and regardless of how people feel about those issues, we are going to need to do an inventory. We're going to need to do taking a stock to find out really what's out there. And if there are different issues in terms of definition of usable lands, we ought to look at those things. So I think Senator Perkins hit the nail squarely on the head. And the idea is definitions are what creates the details, and the devil's always there. Senator George, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm reading from an article within the Oregonian a couple of Sundays ago, and it's talking about the Exrum Farm up in there. I believe Clackamas County is talking about the 2 million acres of prime out of our 52 million acres of total ground, and it's talking about how this land is being used up because the bulk of the cities are, of course, on that in the Willamette Valley. And we know that 74% of the growth is occurring in the Willamette Valley, and they're not out there on that rangeland, you know, in eastern Oregon. I wish they had some growth. They probably could use it. But there was an interesting statement made, and this is a quote from Robert Liberty, and he says, "Some people say it's a terrible thing that farmland is being consumed as if it was some sort of mistake." He goes on to say, "But that isn't a mistake. It is intentional. It was planned." I think that was a very revealing statement about where we are and maybe where we're headed. Because if we don't address this idea of finding someone else, someplace else to grow, we're going to be actually executing what Hector McPherson described as the amoeba-like growth of the cities in the Willamette Valley until there is no longer any land in the Willamette Valley. So it's good to have this debate.
Well, I actually think Liberty's comments are in regards to the prime land that was included inside the UGV.
That's correct. But we extend the UGV, and now we have urban reserve, which by definition says is reserved for eventual urbanization. And if the planners from Washington County told me, we've already used up that. Some people off that. There's still a lot of good left there.
What I think is interesting is to watch the idea that in the urban growth boundaries, those truck gardens and the small family food operations and orchards and the places where people that traditionally got connected with the fresh produce at the farmer's market kind of thing produces, those are the lands that are being converted finally. Yeah, but those may be absolutely the most valuable in terms of people staying connected to some kind of rural values and rural produce and those kinds of things. If you drive out toward Gresham from Portland, you see the conversion of those last
berry cane berry areas and small farms and they're sprouting three-story residential complexes, and it's really kind of too bad to see that to final disconnect, because that does tend to move the city boundaries outwards, and you wonder why there isn't a pressure to keep that open space. As great as there is a pressure against the extension of the UGBs. But, Senator, your
follow-up to that. I heard this morning on the way in here a discussion about in Portland, a whole cannery area that was now being converted to housing. We now understand, you know, through my committee that we have basically no canning operations left in Tualatin Valley, even such Clackamas on the east side. Washington County here, we see the canneries in trouble here. We recognize that something's happened to that ag base. And then we turn on Peter Jennings a few months ago and hear that 50% of the produce in this country is now coming from outside of this country. And you recognize that something's happening here. And if you don't, in fact, find some other place to grow on, quote, secondary land, then I can take and guarantee you that we're going to continue to do what we're doing, which is to march across these 2 million acres of farmland in the Willamette Valley.
The failure is, is it NARPAC and the NARPAC is not the failure of reorganization? Financial difficulty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this issue, I was impressed when I was in China a few years ago, how they do maintain their agricultural land within the cities, even with their vast populations, and how important that is. If you grow in your areas that are not suitable for cropland, and you should be putting your populations as much as possible where it won't infringe on that ability to grow. The reason I wanted to speak to this issue is in regards to the regional problem solving. If we're talking about the same thing, as I recall last session, we also extended the regional problem solving. And I was concerned at that time that if it's successful, then it shouldn't be continue to be a pilot project, which I think it was addressed as being last session. And I assume that it's still being addressed in that manner. I was also concerned that Jackson County, I believe, was one of the regions. It really wasn't a region. It was a county that was under this program. And I do understand that it was quite successful in coordinating all the cities and the communities within that county. But I would like a discussion, and maybe I missed it, because I apologize, I was in and out of this committee a lot. If there was not a report, I would like to hear a report as to how successful that has been in this last biennium. And are we expanding that program, or is it continuing on as another pilot project?
Senator?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Messerly, as part of the direction to us at the beginning of last biennium, we came to the emergency board on 4 occasions to report on the progress of regional problem solving. And in the materials that I gave you, during the budget presentation was the last of the reports that went to the emergency board, so that would have been December of 98. And in that report, and then since that time, I can tell you that there are 4 projects going on around the state. One is in the Lapine area south of Sun River down to the Klamath County line. Another is in the Josephine County, the larger Josephine County area with a link to Jackson County, then on the Clackamas Plains of Clackamas County, and then finally around the casino on Highway 18 involving Yamhill, Polk Counties, the town of Willamina, and a couple of rural communities there. The projects that have made the most progress and are closest to resolution are the Lapine project, which is actually the most difficult, and then secondly, the Josephine County project that involves the City of Grants Pass and the Merlin area north of town. The other two are coming along, but not as quickly. And in the budget presentation, you invited George Reed from Deschutes County, and he told you what's happening with that project. It appears that a combination of measures, including the establishment or taking the community of Lapine and Wickiup Junction, which already have a sewer system that connects them, and increasing the amount of development there as a safety valve for trying to hold the line on developments, the many thousands of lots that are actually in the floodplain of the Little Deschutes and the Deschutes River. That appears to be headed toward a very good solution that everybody supports. The Josephine County program is made up of about five compounds. The biggest and most difficult is that involving Merlin, and you've probably been down there. You know that Merlin is unincorporated. It's about 2 to 3 miles north of the urban growth boundary of Grants Pass, and yet the largest industrial holdings in the county are there rather than inside the Grants Pass urban growth boundary. There's an interchange north of Grants Pass that serves North Valley and Merlin that is at capacity during some times during the day, and a combination of things has made that a very difficult situation. The solution that's on the table is to expand the Grants Pass urban growth boundary to take in most of the Merlin North Valley area in order to facilitate the extension of services from Grants Pass to that area to serve the industrial area. And that seems to be moving down the road. I think we have a solution at hand as well with the Hope County and Hill County one. It's just taking a while for the three local governments to get used to the idea, but I think they will. The slowest one has been the Placid Plains one. It got into trouble about halfway through or part of the way through last rain when they got off track and started, they got sidetracked on some issues involving the silver spot butterfly instead of keeping the focus on water quality problems on the Placid Plains. But I think that's going to come around again probably during this biennium. So those are the four.
Sure. Eric Fellow.
Commissioner Mitchell.
I guess my question would be then, are you intending to expand those pilots, if that's what they're called? And I also want to say that I support the teams, the community solution teams. I think that is a way of which we should be able to see some results, because it seems to me that, and I had a long conversation this morning with a constituent, that the need to get all the people at the table for what community you're in. But when different agencies come in at different times and no one is really speaking off the same page, seems to be one of our biggest obstacles. This is not a reflection on your department necessarily, but just the DEQ, Fish and Wildlife, Business State Lands, the codes people, everybody at the table at the same time so that we can resolve the problems, seems to me. And maybe that's partly what you're doing with these regional problem solving, but it seems to me that we need to expand that to some other areas of the state where we've got some things going on.
And I think that is a thread that's common to these budgets that are all interconnected.
Dick, is nothing a bad idea?
No, Senator Carno, I think it's a good idea. Well, you asked me about mapping. What we think needs to be done, and we've had discussions with the proponents of mapping for secondary lands, and I think we agree. It's not so much mapping that needs to be done, because there's a lot of mapping out there. It's more a question of getting the map information in a common computer language so that it is accessible to people. For example, probably the most significant layer of data that we need statewide is soil mapping units, because that's the basis for virtually everything that follows. That tells you how good it is for agriculture, how good it is for forestry, whether you can get septic tank approval, etc. And in the most pressed parts of the state, that is where population is growing, that information is already mapped. But it isn't on our database, it isn't on the Department of Agriculture's database, it isn't in the GIS Service Center. That needs to be brought in and made accessible to everybody. After that, existing use is very important. For example, where are the orchards? Where are the berry fields? Where is the pasture? That information is already available because it's on aerial photography. We don't have to map for that. But we do have to put it in a format that can be, yes, in our database available to everybody. So that would be terrific. Our argument all along has been, rather than map to somebody's particular formulation of primary versus secondary, we should map in a general way so that you can test a lot of formulations of primary versus secondary. We wouldn't want to be in a situation we found ourselves in a couple of biennials ago where some mapping was done for only one formulation, and then somebody gets the idea, well, what if we did it this way, and you can't do it because you don't have the database for it. So I think there's agreement about what ought to be done.
Senator George?
What do you think about the idea of utilizing the market as a determinant? For example, if it is commercially farmed, then it is farmland.
Market is determiner of what?
Well, in other words, if somebody is commercially farming it, then it must not be farmland, or they would be commercially farming it. Why not have that as a determiner?
Well, for a couple of reasons, Senator George, sometimes the land is out of production by choice, and sometimes it's out of production for quite a while by choice. If that were the sole determiner, then if I had 100 acres of Class 1 farmland just outside the Metro Urban Growth Boundary, I'd simply stop farming it.
Well, no. I'm not suggesting it would override all these other considerations. But if you have ground that soil maps described as Class, 3, 4, 5, stony lands, and it's not being commercially farmed, wouldn't you think that that would mean that it was secondary or whatever word we decide to come up with?
Well, no, I don't know that I would agree with that. I mean, I think about the experience in the Red Hills of Dundee that were in farm use until about the late 40s. They were in prune and walnut orchards, and then the price of those commodities dropped, and those lands, very little was done with them for about the next 30 years. And then somebody decided that it was very suitable for growing grapes, and now it's the keystone of a $48 million industry. So you might have concluded during those 30 or 40 years that it was secondary land and put it into home sites, but instead it's a real contribution to the Oregon agricultural economy.
How about the bird slope of the Dundee Hill?
I'm not familiar with what's happening on
those. Well, there's two sides of every mountain, and that one has a south slope and the vineyards on the other side is the north slope.
Yeah, I understand that. So I don't know what's going on those slopes.
Okay.
There are probably some woodlots in there, and there are quite a few homes up in there as well.
So in this session, we have the issue sort of ripening. We've looked at the income test, the $8,000 income test as an issue, and that, you think that was a market determiner, but in fact, that's not necessarily the best determiner for what the potential for the land is. It was a mechanism. And that's created some hardships on people and created a pent-up demand for change. The situation in Crook County where we've had continuous dynamic tension between the planning commission, or the planning commission in Crook County and the Crook County elected public officials, the commissioners themselves and the judge, and that results in kicking that issue all the way up to Land Use Board of Appeals, and now a fairly major issue of revisiting the whole question of land use in that community, which has implications all over. So I think we're sort of really looking at a more mature land use system. The argument used to be whether or not we needed a land use protection system at all. That argument is not one that I hear very much anymore. Now it's how do we make this thing work and be serviceable for the vast population. Senator Corcoran, had your hand up, and then Senator China.
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, we've gone from ripeness to deja vu all over again. We had 5 months to debate this in two committees that I served on. We've had the substantive discussions. There was attachments of secondary land to regional problem solving. It was an unfortunate decision. It was a decision made by leadership to provoke a veto, I guess. The fact of the matter is, I think at some point, we're in June, we don't have a budget, it might be more helpful to deal with the budget stuff and let them have another shot at the substantive stuff next go around.
Senator Corcoran, I feel much the same you do, and I guess my reaction to that would be, well, we could settle on the budget and go home, or we could start working on a continuing budget resolution in this body.
Yeah.
And that's probably what we're
going to
do. Senator
Turner. Mr. Chair, I'm over the chair. We're solving a whole lot by just talking about living. But maybe there is a way that we could do some things, and the House Bill 2408 deals with statewide mapping issue. Why not put the state in half? Maybe cut the House Bill of the cost in half and do part of the mapping this time and do part of the mapping next time. that the issue was funding, and we could save some money. At the same time, it gives the department opportunities to deal with how to resolve those concerns. And I'm not opposed to looking at dealing with Eastern Oregon concerns. Of course, we have that issue over the pine. I think that was one of the reasons why we had the regional problem solving to begin with, because of the problem of the pine. And at some point in time, we have to stop talking about stuff and do it.
Colleagues, let's put the budget into perspective. I have about three considerations, and then we're going to go to adjournment. But I'd like to give Mr. Benner an opportunity to hear the final recommendations from LFL and react to those. I'd like to recognize Clackamas County Commissioner Larry Sella, who's in the back of the room there, a former state representative Larry Sella, and glad to see that there's life after the legislature, and glad to see you in our committee this morning.
Couldn't tell when he was in the legislature.
Well, some people gain a reputation without being disrupted.
Yeah. Well put,
I'm glad to see that you're here, and if you have any listeners of the board, we can use all we can get, Commissioner Sella. Anyway, if we could have the LFL's final recommendations, and then we'll go ahead. I think there is there are about four issues that need to be determined before we come to closure on this budget. But here are the recommendations, and give Mr. Bennett an opportunity to comment on them.
Well, Mr. Chair, the recommendations that legislative fiscal has proposed are summarized in the memo that we finished going over today. And basically, it would result in a approximately $9.3 million general fund, zero lottery funds, $2.8 million other funds, and about $4.3 million in federal funds. Of that general fund amount, $250,000 would be reserved in the emergency board. This represents a total reduction from the governor's level of about 9.6%, and includes 65 positions or 64 FTEs.
Questions? Mr. Benner, your commentary, any wisdom you'd like to offer us?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're disappointed that you're not recommending the approval of all the packages.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably thought that was my view. I suppose if I were to comment particularly on one or two things, one would be the elimination of package 108. I think by reducing the number of powers of Attorney General time available to us by more than half is going to make it not possible for us to carry out the responsibilities we have under the land use law.
Mr. Benner, there is $195,000 in the budget for all the services needed from the AGs. We have seen about $135,000 a year needed to be expended in additional funds for legal services from the AG's office. We have had this little anomaly pop up in about three budgets, but we didn't get those dollars rolled into the base budget for one reason or another. But my understanding is that at any point in time that you feel the need, you can approach the legislative e-board and on a case-by-case basis or a budget basis and request and receive additional resources as we have in the past. So I understand your reluctance to see that 108 be left off the table, but I also believe that that is not a fatal flaw. The $150,000 that was appropriated to the e-board would still be available on the same basis, is my understanding. But I understand your concern.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to speak in concurrence with the agency here, though, respecting what you said, that I think that by shifting the responsibility to the e-board versus the base budget, that we're just going to generate a lot more time and paperwork on behalf of both the agency and the e-board. And secondly, that the that the method of operation that the agency will have to pursue as a function of not having, you know, the certainty of the funding is going to be below the water levels they want to do in terms of pursuing, you know, what we're mandating, you know, them to do. So I'm going to be arguing to see 108, you know, remaining in the package.
Okay. Well, you're going to have the opportunity. Okay. Any other considerations? If not, Mr. Barron, if you'd like to proceed.
Just two more brief points. The two budget notes that aim at the local government grants program, neither of which in substance I disagree with, will likely have the effect, however, of reducing the amount of money available to other cities and counties to do the work of periodic review and the work that they want to do on their own with a technical assistance grant. So I just wanted you to be aware of that effect, of the likely effect, I should say, of those two budget notes. And then the final point I would make on page 2, the elimination of package 110, that's a small amount of money that we're going to lose out on there, and we'll have to figure out a way to make that up. I guess the point I want to make to you is that since I've been with the department since 91, the amount of our flexibility during a two-year period has been slowly eroded by just not having small amounts of funds like this available. The great amount of the budget that we have goes to salaries and to rent, and what we find is as the biennium begins, our flexibility is very, very limited. And last session we found ourselves so limited because, in particular, there was an agreement between the administration and the two unions about a salary package, and the legislature decided to fund two-thirds of it, and the agencies had to make up the rest. By the time we did that, and we found ourselves with almost no flexibility at all. And the way that plays out, because everything on the program side connects to everything else, is we have to make choices then about things that we would like to do that we can't do. For example, to meet out of Salem. Doesn't seem like a big amount of money, but again, over the bienniums, we've just had so much flexibility taken out of our budget that we have to cut down on travel in order to make ends meet. So I guess that's just the director's lament.
Well, it's well understood. Just with regard to the package that you referred to, package 110, we've anticipated that there would be some collaboration in between the agency and LFL and DAF to figure out how the dispute resolution services would be funded, and that would include some mechanism for dealing with court filings. But I do understand your reference to the issue of not having those funds available. But notwithstanding your argument, the fact is that though we have a paper reduction of 9.6%, that is only on the governor's recommended, which is up from the current level or last biennium's appropriated budget level. So we're talking about flattening the curve up, not eliminating base programs. So, colleagues, there is a matter. There are several matters that need to be resolved before we move forward on this. First of all, what's initially asked about consideration for the budget note for coastal planners, and we have not yet resolved that issue. We've got to solve the issue that Senator Corcoran and others have talked about, and that is the regional problem-solving issue, and that does depend on eliminating the sunset or extending it, and we need to figure out how that's going to happen. So it's my intention to seek the wisdom of the co-chairs on what mechanism they would prefer us to use to solve that problem. We do need to deal directly with the issue of mapping of secondary lands, and as Senator George and Senator Tarno discussed, perhaps it's a matter of taking half the bite this time and finishing it with our next biennium. And also, Representative King suggests that we might possibly look at amending one or more of the substantive bills in the
Ways and Means Subcommittee to deal specifically with the Community Solutions Team. And it is an objective that we would like to see move forward. So with those four issues that we need to resolve, we could come back to the committee and do our work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we have more information or an explanation? As I understand it, the Coastal Zone Manager has an office in Portland, and the two staff members for the coast work out of Salem. Is that right? And I know at one time they had their offices on the coast, and I'm just wondering the justification for those two. But as you mentioned, Mr. Benner, the cost of travel and overnight and this type of thing, if we are moving towards the solution teams at the community level, it would seem to me that those staff members ought to be located closer to the communities they're serving. Primarily as you get into more night meetings and just the ability to work with the staff during the day of the different local governments, it seems to me to be very expensive, number one, and very difficult to coordinate if they're operating out of Salem and yet a large portion of their work is in the local community. So I'd like a little better justification as to the present system or the present locations of those staff members. And with the manager being in Portland, it seems to me it would be very difficult to coordinate with the people who are either in Salem or in the field working with the community.
Mr. Chair?
I represent him.
I'd like to second that also. I also think there's just a practical matter. I think when you do live over in, quote, the valley or in the metro area, you tend to think of things as their problems versus, quote, our problems. And I think there is a difference. Possibly in an approach or a motivation to solution sometimes when you've got a different impact than where you've been for a while.
And I think that the public's perception of whether or not it's the community that's providing a solution to the problem or whether it's just a centralized planning process that nobody really has ownership of. And that makes a big difference about how well systems or decisions are achieved. So it's how well people accept the decisions, and that depends entirely on how their perception is shaped about how the decisions get arrived at. And I guess that there is some, at least in my personal experience, some perception with the federal agencies that they're just not connected to the community. I'd hate to have those perceptions in perpetuated at the state level. But I think people ought to live in the community that they work in. So
thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to continue echoing those comments. And I certainly would not want any comments I'm making here to reflect on this particular agency. But I have noted over the years that there is a real tendency for agencies not to want to have people located out in the community, especially perhaps anybody with any kind of decision-making, policy-making position, because it's very easy for people who are in local communities to become, as indicated, somewhat attached to the community and therefore somewhat divorced from Salem. And agency heads seem to me to have a inclination or a propensity to want to run their show from Salem, and I think that's not necessarily functional in many of the communities.
Spoken like a true Mr. Is there any further issues that we need to consider, Mr. Rocca? I have any thoughts.
And then hope
we have representatives or anything else you'd like to bring up to our colleagues. If there's no further business before the committee, then we stand and adjourn this until tomorrow.